Dearest Swami, who's always with us and very present here, and present in subtle form, and to some of us may see him in the physical form at any time, at any place. Dear Swami, we offer these few words to you and pray that you come through the words, your love comes through the words, so we have darshan of you. So, brothers and sisters, first of all, how wonderful it is to be here and with fellow Sai devotees. Dr. Kanabandi, and excuse my stumbling over Kanabandi, mentioned that if you say you're God or that God is here, some people would kill you for that. I mean, you know, it's such a dark age that there's just a very few of us that not only believe it, but experience it in our bones with Swami. So it's rare to have a group like this of Swami devotees come together and we can talk so freely and openly about Swami. Because as great as Swami is, who understands us when we start talking about Swami? I mean, our whole families drop away. And we're left in the breeze, and sometimes Swami likes that. You know, he likes to tease and tickle and everything else. And he gets a good kick out of us when we squirm a little bit until we stop squirming. He teased us not to squirm anymore. But when we come here, it's easier to see sometimes that God is in you. You know, when we look at each other, especially if you're a guest speaker. Now, I'm not a guest speaker in my home, so Sharon doesn't look at me like that, and the kids don't.
No.
Okay, she does.
That's right.
Yes, darling. So, but you know, when you come here and you're a guest speaker, you know, like that's something, like everybody is a guest speaker, everybody's so nice to you. I mean, they're so warm and beautiful. Ramaswamy picked us up. He was so sweet all the way. Talked about lovely talk about Swami. Hari Konjave Ram. I'm gonna, you know, I'll try my best not to stumble too much. So sweet. Vijay Sai. All of these people. I can't remember all of them, but all of these wonderful people met us with a smile. Were so supportive. And everybody here, very respectful, Sai Ram, you know, it was very nice to see you again. It's so nice. So thank you for that. That's really love. And it makes us feel comfortable and loving amongst our family. I want to thank Goswami for that. And what a beautiful place. We've been here before, I think, because it looks familiar, but what you've done here is extraordinary. I was looking just at how you've done such a nice job with Shirdi Baba. How beautiful he looks there. And Swami, so elegant, simple but extremely elegant. And look at that chair. I was looking at that chair and all of the symbols on the chair and how beautiful the padukas. Thank you. And the robe and the handkerchief and everything, it's so beautiful. And you made such a nice setting. Thank you so much. So wonderful to, and I hope that we can fill it also with some love. So we begin by Sharon saying a word and doing a reading.
Well, I just want to also say thank you so much for all your loving smiles. It really is an honor and a very big joy to be here with so many loving souls. So thank you. And Baba is really not only guru, guide, mother, father, but he's also a great cheerleader. And he's always telling us, come on, believe who you are. Know who you are. So I'm going to give a reading that he gave to the boys, the students, in 1995. He's exhorting us to know yourself. My dear children, awake, awake, awake. This is no time for slumber. You have been asleep and dreaming for thousands of lifetimes. If you do not awaken now, this chance may not come for thousands more. Come with me. Separation is no longer the order of the day. I separated myself from myself so that I could love myself more. The experience is finished. I want all of myself to return and merge into me, the one self. Why do you not avail yourself of this opportunity to attach yourselves to me instead of continually seeking those relationships that can never satisfy you? Even if your child had been as idyllic as you would have liked, it is not your mother's love that you need. Ultimately, it is not even the love of his name and form that you long for. Your deepest, innermost urge is to return to yourself, to love yourself, to become being, awareness, and bliss, which is all you will ever be. Let go of the past. Stop trying to get from each other what you still think you missed in childhood or marriage. You will never find anyone who is enough, not even me. Love yourself, know yourself. Only you will ever be enough. Can you not love yourself? Because I love you over and over again. Did I not move heaven and earth to bring you to me? I have asked all devotees to repeat the mantra, I am God. I am not different from God. Now I ask you specifically, once again, to follow that instruction because it will be the most helpful thing that you can ever do. Now remember, I love you. Now love yourselves.
Great, I'm gonna fiddle with this for a second. So it's not working. Okay, I want to start by invoking Swami's presence like we've been doing, playing just the first little bit. I've learned how to play with this computer, but not very well, so you'll bear with me, but this is so beautiful. So this is the way I'd like to start. You have the sound? Okay, sound is coming, so one second. We're going to start it.
Patapaduma Krishna Palukutene Lulukune Kula Patapaduma Mukunda Manasuti Paduma Krishna Palukute Lolukuna Kula Matala Duma Mukunda Manasuti Paduma
You know, nice to start that way for two reasons. One, to see Swami giving darshan. And two, how beautiful. You know what he said there? He said, I want to read it. Oh, Krishna, sing a song. This is how beautiful his words are. And the theme of this morning talk is the power of the word, because the word is extraordinarily powerful. We know if Swami speaks to us, how strong that is, how powerful. But our word is very powerful too, because when we speak it, we also hear it, and it affects us. What we say not only affects other people, but it affects us. So the way we talk is very, very important. And the power of the word is extraordinary, and we'll get into that. But this is Swami singing. Oh Krishna, sing a song. As if sweet nectar flows from your words. How beautiful that is. I mean, who of us can say and speak to each other as if sweet nectar flows from your words? But many of us have, of course, maybe all of us, have experienced Swami's words where it was just sweet nectar. I mean, just being in his presence, sweet nectar. Oh, Krishna, speak to us. Fill our till our hearts overflow. That the word can do that, that Swami's love through a word can do that, can make a person overflow, his heart overflow. You have given the essence of the Vedas, in the divine sound of Brahma. Who knows even how to speak like that? I mean, how wonderful. You have given the essence of the Vedas in the divine sound of Brahma, stirred it in your flute and sang it for us as a song. Oh, how extraordinary. That Swami has come as Brahma, has taken the word of all of the Vedas and Vedanta, has stirred it in his flute, has spoken it like nectar to us, and has just filled our hearts with it. And it is pure Veda. In all of the many varied levels that we can understand, Swami says, when I say one sentence to you, there are 7 or 10 different levels that you can understand. I've never read anything like Swami. You read one paragraph of Swami in any of his discourses, and there are like 10 levels of areas that he's talking. Nobody can speak like that. Nobody can write like that. I mean, it's so extraordinary. That's why study groups have become so popular. It's a joke. Nah. Not. But that's why it should be so popular. Because he has given us, it's some people think it's his greatest miracle that he has given this to us. Who is Swami? How can we even comprehend who Swami is? I mean, I told you my complete family fell away. Our families fell away. How could it be? They're intelligent people. They say, Sam and Sharon, how could you believe such a thing?
But they even went to India with us, and they still...
They even went 5 times to India with us, and they still... Really, for you to understand and believe is complete grace. Because people that you think are so sensitive and so deep will just think you're telling a joke, or it won't make any difference whatsoever. And then we may hear just a word from Swami and start to cry. And people think you're crazy. It's just, I thought that everybody would understand when they heard something about Swami, because it was so extraordinary. Here is the possibility that we extend beyond time, we never die. Here's the possibility of somebody being omnipresent with you all the time, living in your heart, saving you, helping you, talking to you. I mean, it would be, who wouldn't love that idea? But if you say that idea to people, I mean, who will you ever be labeled crazy? So I'm going to briefly tell my first contact with Swami, because it was so amazing. Young psychiatrist wondering about what the capabilities of the human being is. Because I was interested in the great Jewish mystics, the Zen masters, the Christian saints. And I began reading a little bit about the great saints of India. And so I was wondering, And in that wondering, I heard about Swami. I mean, and I thought, could it be? I mean, it just, it, could this be? And I had to come. Within 2 months, I was in India. But his devotees told me, you think you're going to see him? He's bringing you to him. And I thought that was just pure craziness. You know, as a psychiatrist, I only heard thoughts like that on the closed unit of the psychiatric hospital. You know, that he's bringing you to him. But these people seemed sound and sane. So I went anyways, even though I thought that was a bit crazy. And I came to Bombay, now Mumbai. We were going to go to the first summer course in Indian spirituality, culture and spirituality at Vrindavan. And we heard that Swami was in Mumbai at a, it's going to be at a big auditorium or a big stadium. And I was invited to a devotee's house on the outskirts of Mumbai. That's about 20 million, you know, people in Mumbai. And this is a little, small little house, way, a small little apartment, way on the outskirts. And as I left this apartment, Swami passed me and went into the very same apartment. You know, this was a really extraordinary. I wasn't a devotee, but I just was shocked. And I ran, began to run after him, and I had to stop myself and say, "What are you doing, Sam? Is it the weather? Is it the jet lag? Why are you acting like a crazy?" Because I could sense that if somebody was doing this, if this just wasn't coincidence, then he had control of time and space. My God, do we understand what that means? That he has control of time and space? Life and death? I mean, it's just unbelievable. As if I was in the outskirts of Rome at a little cafe and I was going to go see the Pope at the Vatican. I get up on and walk out, and the Pope comes in and sits in my chair. It's the same kind of coincidence. It's unbelievable coincidence. And many of these things happen to us, and what's strange is we forget it. How quickly we can forget that he is the master of time and space. And then as I got closer, I saw he could materialize objects. He was the master of all matter. He created everything. I mean, you have to make a leap to say created everything, but if somebody can create matter, and you start telling people, that would put you in the hospital. If you say, I know how matter started, to a physicist. It came out of divine will, and I know somebody that can do it. I know somebody that can create matter. Well, cuckoo, cuckoo, you know, very quickly. And yet, as a young psychiatrist, coming back thinking everybody would love to hear that, and becoming aware very quickly that they didn't want to hear that they thought you were crazy, how he protected. Sharon, well, did you think I was crazy? Yeah, a little bit. She'll talk a little bit about it. And then in that first trip also, Swami came to me when I began to listen to what he had to say, and I didn't like it because it was so simplistic, you know, just be good. And I thought, wow, that's the meaning of life, being good. And I came all this way. So I was going to leave. And Swami, I was at Vrindavan in the old house, and I was in the front of the old house, and Swami was in the back where he had just given a talk to all these students at the summer school. And I was just feeling terrible, and Swami came around a wall and came directly up to me, first time with all this recognition, beaming, and he gave me two pieces of candy, and sweets, he said, eat. And I just started giggling like a little child, because it meant his love was so great, and it was personal. He understood us. Now, for a young psychiatrist to see all of this, master of time and place, master of creation, a personal loving consciousness who loves you. Too much for this poor. I mean, I was just sold right there, and I couldn't stop talking about him, even though it was not good for me to do that. It was not good for my career. But he just saved me. I mean, he filled my appointments. It was just wonderful, the trip that we've had with Swami. So the question, do we quite understand how great it is to be with Swami? Do we really get it? And I'm going to just play the next one, a little thing here. Here's an ex-student talking about what Swami is saying.
Some of the boys said, "Oh, Swami, we are so happy. We know that it must be because of our purva janam samskarams and, you know, the merit of our ancestors and the lineage and what have you, that finally we are in the divine presence." So Swami was mischievously listening to all of that. And as one of them said, some of our staff members were there and the elderly people joined in, and everybody said, "Swami, we've done nothing in this life to deserve you." Then Swami said, "Do you know those sages sitting in the Himalayas? Some of them have been meditating for over 1,000 years. And you know, when I appear to them, it's for a brief spell, sometimes less than 2 minutes. So, what have you done, or your family done, or your lineage done, to get, forget 2 minutes, but most of you easily manage hours with Swami every day, and for day after days?" Now we were shocked. We were sure that there was nothing any one of us had done. Then Swami said, "It is your good luck that you were born at the time the avatar decided to come down. It is further your goodness definitely attracted you towards my godliness. But that in itself was just an infinitely small contribution. It is purely my grace and grace alone that each one of you souls have come to me. Not one of you in front of me deserve 1 second of being with Swami. Not one of you deserve. What it is, I am conferring a boon upon you which is a billion times more than any of you deserve." Then of course he looked a little sad and he says, "Not one of you are making even 1 millionth the best of it."
That's a confidence builder, isn't it?
Yeah.
So the question is, are we one in a million that comprehend and are moved by this? Do we really grasp who Swami is, and with complete eternal innocence and vitality, so happy to have found him? And are we following his directive? Well, that's what we're going to think about a little bit. Are we following? And to what extent, when he's given us such a gift? I mean, to think about it, the gift is so great that very few people he allows to know it. I mean, the gift is so wonderful. Here is a little clip of Swami breathing life into the lingam of the first yajna that took place about 2 years ago. Here he is now, physical health looking like it's failing. But he's told people many times, "What are you looking at? You think I'm the physical body?" Evidently he's going through this great drama with us because he's got wonderful drama. He's a wonderful dramatist. He made the whole play. And we don't even know it, you know. We don't even know we're actors. But he keeps on reminding, "You're just an actor, you know. So play it well." Now, here's the director acting. But he's breathing life into the lingam and creating a third eye and putting it on the lingam. Watch how he does this. And he does it. It just rings the love for him and the motherliness that we have to protect him in some way. But let's just watch this for a second.
Lingeshwara, Prana Lingeshwara, Sai Lingeshwara. 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 Lingeshwara, pranalingeshwara sai lingeshwara
lingeshwara
pranalingeshwara sai lingeshwara
lingeshwara pranalingeshwara sai lingeshwara lingeshwara pranalingeshwara sai lingeshwara lingeshwara pranalingeshwara sai lingeshwara lingeshwara pranalingeshwara sai lingeshwara lingeshwara pranalingeshwara sai lingeshwara lingeshwara pranalingeshwara sai lingeshwara lingeshwara pranalingeshwara sai lingeshwara lingeshwara pranalingeshwara sai lingeshwara lingeshwara pranalingeshwara sai lingeshwara lingeshwara pranalingeshwara sai lingeshwara lingeshwara pranalingeshwara sai lingeshwara.
I think a rough translation of that is, I've come to breathe the wisdom, ancient wisdom, Sanatana Dharma, into your hearts. You're the repository of my love and my wisdom, and I'm setting you out, and I'm guiding and guarding you, and I'm protecting you, and I'm encouraging you to imbibe what I'm giving you, to understand what I'm giving you, and to practice it, and to be beacons, to be extensions of me. I think that that's what that means. It seems to me that that's what that means. And if we don't quite get it, we're not alone. Because the Pandavas, at the end of Krishna's life, when Krishna left the body, this is how they lamented. I'll read a little segment. This is from the Bhagavata Vahini. This is what the Pandavas were saying. We cannot sense the mystery of his play. We have failed to understand it. With that deluding human form, he moved with us, mixed with us, dined with us, behaved as if he were our kinsman and well-wisher, our friend and guide, and saved us from many a calamity that threatened to overwhelm us. He showered his divine mercy on us and solved for us the toughest problems that defied solution in remarkably simple ways. During all this time that he was near and dear to us, we were carried away by pride that we had his grace, that we did not try to fill ourselves with that supreme joy, to dive deep into the flood of his grace. We sought from him mere external victories and temporal benefits. We ignored the vast treasure with which we could have filled our hearts. We never contemplated his real reality. That's what the Pandavas said. So Swami has said that in us is divinity, and that there are four levels of mukti, of liberation. Liberation from being so attached to the external world, being free from it. Because he says when we're free from it, and when we've given up the attachments, that naturally the Atma will shine. It's natural to us. We don't have to learn anything. We just have to learn to let go. These four types of mukti are, as I understand, as we begin to get close to Swami, his beauty is so great that he absorbs us. We can become absorbed in him. So we begin to chant his name a little bit more frequently. We begin to think about him a little bit more, and we begin to try to practice seeing him in other people. We begin to practice his teaching. And he's so beautiful. And we realize life is so temporary, that everything is so impermanent, that it fires us to dive deeper into him, and his heart is so great that it can absorb us. So that's what we're, most of us are learning that. And how much are we giving ourselves to that, to becoming more and more absorbed? Then we see fellow devotees, all they do is chant his name. They can still work, and they hands in society, but head is with Swami. In the forest, chanting his name, looking for him, watching for him. That's why it's good to have satsang, to be around some devotees who have devoted themselves, there's been a little purification, and they're absorbed. And Swami can absorb you completely. So then, all of a sudden, one day, bing, I recognize that divinity lies inside myself. I can recognize a divine experience. And some of us have had experiences which have been so extraordinary, we see something awakening in us. Call it some love, call it kundalini. You know, if kundalini strikes all of a sudden, and you feel it, you say something has awakened that is really unusual. Because I can feel it, and it's vibrating through me. And when I was hearing stories like this, in the process of my practice, and I was writing about, because I became aware that we have this inside us. We have divinity inside us. When the clouds leave, we all can have the experience. This is the first stage of mukti, where you recognize there's been a transformation inside, and you experience this experience. Whether it's love, whether it's radiation from the heart, whether it's kundalini experience, but something happens, you're transformed. It's not just the thought. And when I was becoming aware of this and starting to write about kundalini in the second book, one of my patients out of the blue began to speak Sanskrit. And maybe I'll share some of that story with you, because she began Sanskrit. And then the Bodhi started to come on her cross. And boy, did things start to happen. I mean, it started covering her body. One time she was taken care of in the house of a devotee, the pictures of Vibhuti Amrita. And I took pictures of all this, and maybe I'll share a little of it with you. But it was Swami giving a personal miracle in some way to say, yes, the spiritual dimension exists, although you can't see it because the senses attach you to the external world. When they lift, there's this whole dimension. And all the angels and archangels are coming to Prashanti to see me, because the whole world is filled with divine creature, divine entities, and you are too, and you're coming because you recognize me. It's really quite extraordinary. So, mukti, and this awakening, it happens. And then Swami keeps on prompting us. The second one is we begin to see divinity in the other person. First, we just think it and we try to practice. I'm seeing divinity in you. I can see it's only so far until you start hurting me, then I want to hit you. But I get better and better at it. But there comes a time when actually you see it. Dr. Hislop, who many of you may know, I mean, he came back from Swami one time and he saw Swami all through. He would come to a conference. And he says, you know, I see Swami every place in here. He's walking around. Can't you see him? Extraordinary phenomena. But in what way will we see? What way will we see? Will we see all of this begin to dissolve and we just see the passage of time in front of us and behind it the great creative force, and all we see is the creative force? That's called fundamental vision, where we stop seeing a person, but we see the creator. You know, one time Swami materialized a lime. Dr. Venkataraman told me the story. He was with Swami. And Swami materialized a lime. He says, what do you see? And they say, well, we think it's a lime, Swami. And everybody was, you know, they all thought that was the same thing. Swami says, I see consciousness. And then he threw it to somebody. A fundamental vision. When we see the world, we generally are so caught in it that we see each person in our drama. But who is so impressed that when they look, they see, my God, what is this creation? I mean, that's fundamental. That is seeing the silver in the bowl, you know, that the underlying fundamental quality, instead of getting caught in specifics. Well, one day that must happen to us, that when we get rid of and we give up blaming people, we give up thinking the other person's different than ourselves, we practice Swami's teaching, then one day, boom, we don't see you and me, we see everything is impermanent, and then who was it created by? We see the creator. We actually see the creator. That's extraordinary if that happens. That's the second mukti. The third, Swami has described, living in the constant presence, experiencing yourself, experiencing every place, living there constantly. And the fourth, Swami said, the Advaitists say, you don't reach the final stage until you have acquired the power of creation, preservation, and dissolution. That's something. Swami is the example. What kind of knowledge is this? If I was in another meeting and tried to say this, my God, they'd take me away. You know, I once presented a conference at the American Psychiatric Association, and I thought they would be interested in seeing Swami materialize vibhuti out of doing the vibhuti abhishekam, you know, when he puts his hand in there? I thought they'd be interested. I had two other side devotees with me, and they said, don't do it. But I said, no, I'm going to couch it this way. I'm going to say that some people believe, this is a cultural thing, they believe that what's happening is that he's actually doing it, and that it's a teaching that fundamentally, when everything is burned away, only the Atma exists, soul exists. That's what that ash means. So I thought I was going to be a little intellectual and explain it that way. But I knew that underneath, if anybody just saw the miracle, it would be a wonderful thing to show at a psychiatric meeting, American Psychiatric Association. So I, with confidence, explained it that way. I thought I'd done a good job rationalizing it. And then Swami came, elephant came first, somebody holding the umbrella. Swami came on stage, he did like this, like this, like this. And I was just so happy. And my friends were sweating. But when we were done, first person got up in the audience. He says, I've seen a cheap magician do better. Oh, and then they just kept blow after blow until I had to sit down. My friend who knew it was going to happen got up and had to do the rest of the conference. You know, it was a real attack. But we believe it. Not only do we believe it, and this is an extraordinary thing to believe, we've seen him and we've been with him. We know this exists. We know this kind of growth can happen inside ourselves. Okay, what is the teaching then? What is the teaching? Very, very quickly, I'm going to give a little bit, and then we're going to let Sharon speak because she's been so sweet. You see this patience? You think I'd have the patience? Yeah, 46 years of patience. Yeah, I've been waiting 46 years, she said.
Practice.
Yeah, practice patience. So. That's the challenge. So, and Dr. Kandabandi said, Kandabandi. I'm glad, you know, you say my name much easier than I say yours. Kandabandi. Venkat Kandabandi. While he was talking about this question, why, if Swami says we're divine, don't we experience it? What's in the way? What are the clouds all about? And Swami tells us it's the mind. Learn something about the mind. The mind is the key. It's the key. You turn it to the right, which is the right way, to Swami, to God, and it will release you. It is it is the cause of both bondage and liberation, the mind. So we have to understand something about this mind. Turn it to the left and you're into the world, and the world traps you like a crocodile. So what does it mean? Should we be frightened of living in the world? No, we just have to learn how to do it correctly. And Swami's here to teach us how to do it correctly. What is the problem with the mind? The mind is very wonderful. We're not saying bad things about the mind, but in a spiritual sense, it stops us because it believes the external world is so real that it leaves out other possibilities. And when the mind becomes attracted to the external objects, it becomes attached, it becomes addicted, and you stimulate or thwart that, and it becomes all the six enemies, lust, anger, pride, greed, envy, jealousy, and all of that comes up, and you've got to deal. And when you get angry, you lose your memory, your sense of what's reasonable. When that goes, you forget the purpose of life, and you self-destruct. That's the second chapter, in the second chapter of the Gita. Right away, it tells you that that's what the mind does. So we have to learn to pull ourselves away. First thing is sense control. Now, nobody likes to hear anything about sense control because it's such a boring subject. Because most people think, I don't want to hear that I have to stop all fun. I don't, you know, it's such a rigorous control of myself. And nobody likes to hear that kind of thing. But the senses are so strong. And Buddha was once asked, before you hit upon the idea that you should look inside and spiritualize the senses, what did you learn from all the asceticism and the ritualistic activities? Swami said this, you know, and Buddha said, I learned absolutely nothing until he began to look inside and to train the senses in some way. So I'm going to try to make it kind of interesting. I don't know how the senses, you know, but the senses are so powerful. If you lost one, for instance, let's say you closed your eyes and when you opened, you couldn't see anymore. Would that be a big loss? I mean, it'd be a huge loss. Let's say you couldn't hear anymore. You couldn't taste anymore. You couldn't feel anymore. You wouldn't even know if you're standing straight. You'd fall down and you wouldn't even know how which side you landed on. If you lost one of your senses, they're so powerful. But we don't want to hear that there are certain ways of having to control this because the senses can run away with you. Or, like Swami says, be a mastermind and control the senses. Well, how do you do that? I mean, that's a huge... How do you start controlling something that's so powerful? I'd like to take the tongue. Because Swami says, you know, if you control the tongue, that's pretty good. All the other senses fall in line. The tongue eating, who of us has control of sweets? And overeating? And talking. They're related. Swami says, if you talk too much, you dissipate yourself and you become prematurely senile. That's a happy thought. And the other one is, if you talk while eating, you'll eat more and you'll gain a lot of weight. So if we talk a lot, we're going to be fat, senile people. We should realize there's a bad payoff with that. The word is extraordinarily powerful. In fact, in the Judeo-Christian tradition, they say, in the beginning there was the Word. And the Word was with God, and the Word was God. Now, do you want to try that? Do you want to try to show how that... You know, Sharon would dance with a Christian church.
For 30 years.
Because the Christian minister liked dance, and he liked to express the message in dance. And Sharon likes to dance. And so this was a saying at the beginning of many of his talks. In the beginning, there was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. You want to try that out here?
I don't know.
I just laid this on
it. It wasn't in the script.
Right.
Our script.
And we really scripted. We really, you can see we scripted this really strong.
Okay. I'm not sure I can do it. Okay, we start this way. We're all ladies, aging ladies, because we started younger, and then 30 years later, we were aging ladies, and I'm Jewish. Baba loving, and going dancing at a church. So very eclectic. But we started this way. We went, in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. All things were made through him, and without him was not anything made. In him was light, and the light was the light of man. The light shineth in the darkness, and the darkness overcometh. We should get Sam to do it. Only a crazy lady would do that.
Isn't that amazing what kind of spirit she has? I mean, I saw that at the beginning and I wondered, what is that spirit?
Crazy.
No. I've never thought you're crazy.
We were in Russia recently, last year, and we were doing, well, we're going to tell the story, but we were singing a song, many, many bhajans, and all of a sudden, all the Russian men, as well as women, got up on the stage, and they were all dancing around and moving around. It was so joyful, and I thought, we would never do that in the States. We just don't let ourselves go like that, but it would be a lot of fun.
Especially when we're talking about sense control.
Right. It's such a downer.
No, you can have a lot of joy. And I'm just amazed. I said, Sharon, you know, I was going to say this about, in the beginning there was a word, and she says, you know, we used to do this at the church. And so she did that, and I said, will you do it in front of everybody? She said, sure. I mean, who could do that in front of everybody on a moment's notice? Quite good.
What we should do, since everyone's been sitting so long, why don't we sing, like, sing Japanese?
Okay. Well, then, okay, Sharon says, because you're sitting so long, we should sing a bhajan, chant the name of God.
Together, in unison, just to bring the energy up.
Should we do that?
You know, because
then you lead it.
No, you lead it. We're together.
Okay. Well, we're one.
Let's do it in unison.
Baba says
so
we're
when
one.
We forget a word, you'll just lead us. You know, chant the name of God.
Sing the glory of the Lord. Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Hare Krishna, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Hare Krishna, Hare Ram, Mama or Krishna, Jesus or Astra, Kama Mama or Buddha, Jesus or Anasi Ram, Rahim, Mahavir, Sainata, these all names that are. He's all names and all points choose anyone. He's all names and all points choose anyone. He's all names and all points Almighty One. He's all names and all points Almighty One. Chant the name of God, sing the glory of the Lord. Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Hare Krishna Sahira, Kalmahala or Buddha, Jesus or Asa, Ram, Rahim, Mahavir, Sainata, He's all names and all forms, choose anyone. He's all names and all forms, Almighty One. He's all names and all forms, Almighty One.
Chant the name of God, sing the glory of the Lord. Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Hare Krishna, Sai Ram. That was a good idea.
That was great.
That was a good one. The word. So, most of us think that when we say something, it affects the other person. But when we say something, it affects us tremendously. And that's why it's very important to learn how to talk right. For instance, just the name of Om. When we chant Om, is it affecting the other person or does it affect us? That when we sing a song, as soon as we start getting into the song, is it affecting the other person or is it affecting us? The mind creates the word or is the word fashioning the mind? The word has extraordinary power. Take the word Om, for instance. Well, take the Gayatri. I remember one time, this was really quite an eye-opener for me. We were going to India, and I was feeling a little anxious. I don't know why I was feeling anxious, although when I go to Swami, everything happens. You know, when you're tested and you're challenged. I'm generally challenged. I'm a generally challenged person. No, okay, not. But confidence. Okay. We were in the Singapore airport, and we had a Singapore room. You know, there's a hotel in the. And I laid down, and I began just chanting the Gayatri. And I got through half of the Gayatri, and all of a sudden, I felt the Gayatri began to chant me. Now, that's pretty spooky. That's unusual. But I began to feel the vibration of the Gayatri, and it just went into all of my body. And it just taught me how to relax. Om Bhur Bhuva Suvaha Tat Savitur Varenyam. Now, we think that it has power when we chant it. Some of us can move into the vibration and expand. But this was really quite dramatic. I mean, to think that a vibration can move into you and teach you something, that it will teach you something. Well, we're dealing with very powerful energy when we're chanting the Gayatri or chanting Om. It's extraordinary. One day, I had a patient who came into the office, and she was hurting. She had diabetes, and she lost her job as a nurse, and she was unhappy and angry, and did she swear? I'm not going to do it in front of you, what she did. But it was, I mean, it made me cringe. Every word, I mean, was the, you know, word. And I had to stop her and I said, look, we have to clean up your language a little bit. She said, what are you talking about? And then blah, 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 with all that all. And so I says, stopped her after she could calm down a little. No, we have to really clean it up a little bit. You have to show respect to me and to yourself and to the language and all that. She says, what are you, my mother? What are you, my father? Like that, you know. So I said, no, look, this is not only a belief. This is the way psychiatry is. This is the way the mind runs. If you keep on talking like that, it's going to have a bad effect, terrible effect on the mind. And if we can change the rhythm. You know, this is basic cognitive therapy, you know. Cognitive therapy. And Swami is giving us the deepest kind of cognitive therapy. How to think and how to talk and how to vibrate. And he's doing behavioral therapy too. How to sit, how to meditate, how to serve. I mean, he's the basic cognitive behavioral therapist. He's just extraordinary. So she reluctantly started to lessen the frequency of these words. And pretty soon they quieted down. And then she came in and told me the story. I was out shopping and I came upon a lady that used to be my patient. She was a mental health patient. And it was nice to talk to her again. I saw her, I got caught up. And then she had to be taken back to her board and care, her convalescent home. And I says, well, I'll take you back. So I went back with her and it was time for medication. So we went to the nurse's station and the nurse said, you should take your medicine now. And this lady began to yell and scream and swear. And I said to her, no, that's not good for you. These words are strong. And, you know, if you disrespect the word and you disrespect, you're just frightened and you're starting to talk that way. But well, talking that way is not good for you. And so the lady listened to her and she says, okay, I'll take the medicine. And then this patient came back and she says, you know, that felt very, very good. I think I could become a nurse again. Really, really, it was quite a turnaround for this person. And the focus of the therapy was just stopping these swear words. Anyways, word is very, very, very important. And we're going to tell a story now about the importance of this word and how Swami taught us how we learn deeper meaning of the word, how words can bring us together, how the word, which is the medium through which we build relationship, is very, very, very critical. How to choose it right and how to say it sweetly and softly and turn it in the flute and let it come out as a lesson from Brahman. It's you know, the way Swami says these things. But that's what we should do. And wow, we should know that the power of the word is that strong. So one day, we were with Swami in February 2005, and he materialized this ring for Sharon. And you want to take over over the story.
So it was very unexpected, and I looked at the ring, and actually it wasn't in this direction, it was another direction. I thought to myself, and I even said, is this Arabic? And it was, you have to understand the history that when Sam, we're Jewish, and I have a strong Jewish identity. When Sam first came back from India, it was a threat to my whole reality system, and I didn't understand Baba's teachings about the unity of all faith, that it's all one. And I was very threatened, and I said, but I'm Jewish, and how could I, you know, Jews don't see divinity in a form, and it was very difficult for me at first, and it took years, actually, and I struggled and struggled, and I saw Baba's love, but still I was hanging on to my old identity and not realizing that it was all one. But over time, Baba gave me experiences, and it took 15 years of holding on to him and not letting go and say, Baba, come on, show me that you love me. Show me that it's okay, that it's all together, it's all unity, it's all perfect for my life, for our life, and for our children's lives. But anyways, at this point, 2005, all that was past. That was way in the past. You have to remember, we've been with Baba 37 years, so that was way in the beginning, the first 14 or 15 years of struggle. So I would say to anyone, if you're struggling, don't let go of him. Hold on to him, because he's going to give you an experience, and he will show you that he is really loving you very much. But anyway, this ring came out, and I looked at it, and I was a little disappointed, because You know, you've seen all the different rings that Baba's materialized, little diamonds and beautiful shining green ones. He once made a green one for Sam, and I kept on playing with it and trying it on, saying, this is nice. And then ultimately, Baba kept on asking Sam, do you want this or not? Do you want your old ring or your new ring? And finally, Sam said, whatever, your wish. And then Baba turned it back to his old ring. So the green was gone. It was out of our lives. And I stopped desiring it. But then, so I said, is this Arabic? And Baba looked at it as if to say, what did I create? And then he said, oh, no, this is the names of God. So we looked after we walked and we said, oh, it's a stylized om. And that's how we thought it was, a stylized om. And so I started at first having this feeling of, what is this for me? Why? I began to love the ring very much.
This is the one that you
want to work. So this is the ring. This is the way.
It's turned now.
Now it's turned. And so then for a year, we just thought it was a stylized om, and we thought maybe it was something that we didn't know, a language that we didn't know, and I just loved the ring. Then we went on a big service project. We had to come back. We're from Detroit. We're Midwesterners, actually. For years, and we went to Ann Arbor, to University of Michigan, so we're very comfortable in this terrain with Midwesterners. But then we came back to help my brother, who was struggling, has had a lot of difficulty in his life. I was like he was my older brother, but I was the stronger of the two, and of the four of us, and I kind of watched over him, and he became a teacher, but he had a very hard life, and he had a very emotionally disturbed wife. And so we came to move him out of a terrible, terrible, dilapidated living situation, which we never knew about. And so Sam and I put on our face masks and went into his place and cleaned it up and moved him out of it into something, to a senior environment. We worked really hard. Sam was so wonderful. That was love in action.
Can I just say one word here?
Yeah.
See, I'm not as patient as her. I want to, you know, share.
That is true. And that's what Baba says.
I want to slow the story down for a second. You know, Sharon's brother had been ill for quite a while. And when he and his wife weren't able to care for themselves very much, an opening came for a supported living setting so that they could go into a living setting. And they were very, very weakened. So we went over there, and it's true. The house was in such a shambles, we didn't know that they were living that way, that we put masks on and goggles and almost like a space
suit.
Because
they had animals.
Like that, you know? And they just laughed at us. They wondered, what are you doing in our house looking like that? But we cleaned out the house, and then we got them settled in another place. And then we
ended up going to we were in a motel checking out, and the woman behind the desk said, do you know what your ring says? And I said, no, what is it? And she said, well, that's Allah. I said, oh, Islam? And she said, no, that's the name of God, like Baba said. And so we knew that Baba had, for a Jewish woman, you know, clinging at one time to her Jewish identity, which now I see it's all beautifully one identity, he made me this Allah ring, which I really love. And then we looked at it from another perspective. We could see it was a stylized om. And then we looked at this way, and then a woman said, you know, that says I am, like Baba says, I am I. And then we looked at another way, and Sam says it's Hebrew for, is that?
Well,
El
is a Jewish name for God.
For
Even
God.
El.
So it's a very all-inclusive ring. And so then we went to St. Petersburg last year, and we didn't understand that a lot of Russians are Muslim. And so there were many people not only from Moscow and St. Petersburg, from outlying areas. People there travel 2 to 3 days on a train to come to a conference. And a lot of them have no money, so the conference was not in a beautiful campsite like this. It was a kind of a shabby, run-down little campsite with spiders and dust and everything, but it was affordable for many of the Russians. And so a lot of them had come from Dagestan and Kazakhstan, and all the stans are actually Muslim countries. A lot of them are, all the stan countries. And so When we told the story of the ring, some of the women came up to me, to us and to me, and they started kissing the ring, and a few of them said, "Oh my God, Baba loves us. He loves us. We've got to show our husbands. Our husbands are very unhappy that we're here because they don't like Sai Baba. They think he's Hindu and he doesn't like the Muslims, and we don't want you." The husbands are telling the wives, "You shouldn't be going to that place." And these women were so beautiful. They were all working so hard in the kitchen. And I understand because I'm usually in the kitchen. working. That's where a lot of the women, although we have a lot of men working in our the Sai Center in San Diego. A lot of the men are the cooks. The women clean up, and the men are the cooks. But so these women were hugging me, and they were so excited and so happy. And then we had this joyful meeting where we all got on, well, Sam didn't, but they dragged a lot of us on the stage, dancing and moving and singing. And
too repressed.
He is very repressed and self-conscious.
I didn't want to do Swami a disservice by looking like a fool.
See, and I don't care. I don't care. At my age, I don't care. Maybe when I was younger, I cared. But then that's the freedom of getting older. You don't care as much. But then you want to tell about the professor. But the one last little ending to this thing before Sam tells a little more about it, goes into the music part, was that I met this woman in India when we just returned 2 weeks ago, and she came up and hugged me, and she was there with her four sisters. Five sisters were all Baba devotees, still Muslims, but loving Baba, one living in the village, and she said, "The best part is that my husband's here. My husband's here." And she was so happy, and she said, "My husband," she put the ring, she made a big picture of it in her house, and gradually, we were there a year and a half ago, gradually, her husband got interested, came with her to India, and he saw Baba, and he fell in love with Baba. And it's such a beautiful ending to the story. And so now they're a united family, like our family. You know how we struggled at first? I struggled. He didn't struggle. And maybe he struggled with me. But then, so that was the happy ending.
So at this conference in St. Petersburg, there was a Professor Zafir. He was the chancellor of a large university in Dagestan. I never knew there was such a country called Dagestan, but there is. And he was so taken with Swami's teaching about values education, because it was, you know, it's in the education field, and educare. And the teaching of heart, that has to go on, because knowledge without heart is nothing. Commerce without morality, you know those. It's dangerous to have education without heart, without humanity. So he asked Swami, can you tell me how to integrate your EduCare program into my program at Dagestan University? And Swami says, "No, you have to do it yourself. You're an educator." He's making us all learn how to integrate this. He's teaching us such purity, and then we have to do the job ourselves. One time, after Swami wrote this first book that he let me have, I said, "Swami, who should publish it?" He said, "You should." I mean, I'm not a publisher. And I said, "Swami, but I'm not a businessman." And he said, "I'm not a businessman either." So he wants us to integrate, you know, integrate what he's telling you and to really do it. I would be a psychiatrist for most of the day, thinking I was a big shot, listening to people and giving advice like I thought I knew what I was doing. At the end of the day, I would go into the back room and I would take a look at the orders, and I would write them out, and I would lick the stamps, and I'd put the tape on, then I'd lift it on my shoulder, and I'd take it to the post office, and I'd wait in line. So which was more of an education for me? The integration of being a humble servant like that, or being a psychiatrist? And Swami, of course, was taking a lot of the psychiatry out of me, teaching me something about the mind that I didn't know about. Well, here we were with Professor Zafir, and there are a lot more Muslims coming to see Swami now. You know, this must be the time. there was that prediction that they would be the last to come. And during my last visit, you know, we just came back 10 days ago, I met an Egyptian-born man who traveled to Greece, was teaching at the Aristotelian University of Thessalonica, which is second capital of Greece, evidently Thessalonica. And he was teaching Greek studies and Islamic studies, and I was I did an interview with him. What is it in the Muslim mind that was attracted to Socrates, and how did that move you to an attraction to Swami, and is there something in the Muslim mind that would be difficult to open to Swami, and what would the way be to open that, to help it open? He gave a wonderful, wonderful, we had a wonderful conversation. Anyways, we showed the ring, and Sharon said how these women loved it. You should have seen. They were hugging her and throwing her around the room like a football. I was frightened. They would grab her. They were big Russian women, you know, and they would hug her and throw her and laugh, and they were so happy. And then I told the story, and while I was telling the story, there was Zafir smiling and smiling. It meant so much to them. That the Muslim would see that Swami did this. And then we played this, and this is where there was a lot of... Let's just see what we've got here. Whoops. Okay, this is... we played this, and we'll play it for a little while because it'll be... it'll help us relax.
Allahu Akbar. Allah, Allahu Akbar. Allahu Akbar, Allahu Akbar, Allahu Akbar.
You can sing if you want. Sharon was doing a wonderful dance, and there I was sitting down.
It's so much fun because it gets your charge, doesn't it?
Yes. One quick last story.
Self-conscious.
Yeah. in the shower. I mean, so we just got back from Swami, and this is a story that just happened. We had thought that Swami takes care of our relatives, and Swami had us go to Detroit to help our relatives move from one place to another and be safe. And 4 months ago, Michael, Sharon's brother, got very ill, a dissecting aneurysm, aortic aneurysm, had to have surgery, was in a hospital bed, wasn't getting better, 2 months, 3 months.
On a respirator.
On a respirator.
She couldn't talk, which is a
dialysis every second day on a respirator.
His stomach couldn't digest.
Yeah, it was no quality of life, so he was laying like that. And so we went and paid him a visit, and I said, Michael, you know how much Sharon loves you? And he starts to cry because he was quite conscious that he was laying like that at the end of his life, which we're all going to be doing most likely. You know, we'll watch life leave, and if we learn our lesson, we'll be able to do it with a great amount of peace and love. So we had arranged to come to Chicago, and then we were going to go from Chicago, you know, for this conference, and then go to Detroit. So we had arranged that months before. And when we were in India, we heard from our relatives that he wanted to be taken off of all life support. So that meant, and because of the difficulty in getting everybody together, they could only get together if we came directly from India to Detroit. It was going to be a real push. And so we try to make arrangements as if we were the doer. And we pushed to make the arrangements with the hotel and with the car and with the planes. And it was really something. And, you know, connections in India are not the easiest. So I was doing it at the end of a hard day, and so it was even more of a push. So the pressure was on. Then the last day, just before, you know, Swami wasn't coming out in the morning. And in the afternoon, he looked pretty, at the beginning, very weak. He would slump to the side. He looked vacant for a lot. And everybody, I was worried, and people were worried. He came out, and he started becoming much more alive, all familiarity, great sense of control after that. But for these few days, and people were wondering what was happening, was he taking on the swine flu, or this or that? You know, we don't know what Swami is doing. So then this last day, just by chance, we call home, and Michael had changed his plan. He wanted to die right away. I think he was visited by Swami, and Swami was taking care. You know, you start getting an unusual feeling. The pressure was on. This drama was going on for 4 months, and all of a sudden, Michael decided he wanted all the support systems off. And all of the plans that we had made crumbled, and in the background that came forward was everything that was perfect. The memorial would happen just as we were leaving here. We would be able to go there as if Swami had planned our coming here for the memorial. I mean, it's really unusual. But when you're in the middle of a play, it seems so much clearer. I can't tell you quite how it was, but in the middle of this drama, all of a sudden, and it's our last day with Swami, our last moments with Swami.
And the whole trip was, there was a feeling of a pallor of illness. Our cat is dying. We have a beautiful little old cat who's, we didn't know if she was going to go while we were gone. And then Baba looked so pathetic and weak, even though we know he's playing that role. But it was very sad to see him, and it brought up all the motherly feelings, although I must say we saw some people just grabbing at his feet, even though he was looking so peaked. And then there was my brother who was suffering. And so then when we found out, my brother very bravely said, okay, enough. I don't want to subject the family. His mind was completely there, all completely, but he couldn't speak and his stomach couldn't digest. He was going to end it. So Sam was, again, this is where you see love in action, how beautiful he was. He spent several nights on the computer after a long day trying to change the plane, trying to get the hotel, trying to get the car, trying to change all of our plans around, trying to figure how we're going to come with all of our gear and everything, go to immediately Detroit. And then there was going to be a funeral. Well, then all of a sudden everything changed. My brother wanted to go immediately. We'd never be able to make it. He was going to pass away while we were on the way home. And then he didn't wanted a cremation, so there wasn't going to be a funeral. So it's as if, and then Baba at the last minute, he was so sweet.
Oh, well, before the last minute, this eerie feeling, when you're right in the middle of the play, you can see it a little more clearly because it's hard to communicate, that Swami has control of life and death, that he was taking Michael. And he knew the timing. We thought we were the doer, but he behind the scenes, even coming to this conference, that it fit in, that his plan was so perfect.
Zero?
Does Swami...
Oh,
zero?
Oh, five.
We have,
five.
Oh, that was a five? Okay, because we're just about done. We had such a feeling that Swami has control of life and death, our life and death, not only ours, but your relatives in the past and in the future. We cannot imagine his power and his glory because he can camouflage it and come out looking like an ill man in a wheelchair. And yet everything is still happening as powerful as ever. I mean, many, many stories of how great it is. And we have to expect at this moment that he's going to charge us even more. We have to be very, very dedicated. And that innocent, alive faith has to stay this way. We've got to watch it very carefully. He's molding us into wonderful instruments. And the last little thing we're going to play, and then we scram, is a little piece, you've probably seen it, how Swami is making us into an orchestra playing lovely together, and that when we play good together like a family, and we're able to put on a nice conference, and we know how to sing together, that he gives us wonderful grace. Here he is with the Sai Orchestra.
Thank you, Swami.